Les colloques du Collège de France.
Now come the next talk given by Tommaso Taddei. Tommaso Taddei is currently in Rome. Okay, after going from Italy to MIT to Paris, Bordeaux, back in Rome. So I had the pleasure to work with Tommaso when he was postdoc at the lab, and then he went to INRIA working with Angelo for a quite long period. And now he's on his own on the Sapienza University of Rome. So he will speak about the registration method in which it's one big part of his research. Thanks. In bounded domain for model reduction of parametric conservation laws. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Yvonne. Thanks for the invitation. It's truly a great pleasure for me to be here in this venue and truly an honor. So this is a joint work with several collaborators that are old friends, all from France, I should say. And I also would like to thank my former sponsors. So this is going to be a very traditional work on model order reduction. So just to fix the notation, U here stands for the solution to a parametric PDE, which depend on some parameters, mu, in some compact set, curly P, which is going to be finite dimensionals. Curly X and curly Y are Hilbert spaces defined over a parameter independent domain, which I denote by omega, and curly M is the solution set which collects the solution to the PDE for all parameters in the prescribed parameter range. So when we develop a model reduction technique, basically we need to face three major challenges, I should say. The first step is to define an high fidelity discretization. So we replace the infinite dimensional spaces, curly X and curly Y, the test space, with finite dimensional ones. The second step is to identify a low rank representation of the solution field. So we express U at our prediction as Z of alpha at, where Z is a linear or nonlinear operator from Rn, which is going to be of low dimensionals compared to the dimension of the high fidelity space, with values in the high fidelity space, and alpha at is a vector of generalized coordinates which depends on the value of the parameter. The third step of model reduction is to identify a reducer than model formulation. This can be done in an intrusive manner with some sort of projection or collocation, or can be done using some form of regression. Okay? Now, traditional model reduction techniques rely on linear approximation, which means that Z here is a linear operator. Furthermore, they rely on a single high fidelity discretization, which means a single mesh, to represent all elements of the solution set. Now, these two features are particularly problematic when dealing with transfer phenomena. First of all, it is well known that linear approximations are inadequate for transfer phenomena, meaning that the Kolmogorov and Witt decay slowly for those problems. And also because mesh adaptation is absolutely needed to resolve sharp features of the solution field. So let me explain this through a simple example. Consider these two snapshots in black. We want to approximate the one in between in dashed blue. If you think about optimal approximation, optimal in a L1 sense, this is what we get. And this is not just quantitatively inaccurate, meaning the L1 error is pretty large, but it's also qualitatively wrong, meaning that we predict two discontinuities instead of one. If we modify the value of the generalized coordinates, we are not going to be able to modify the location of the discontinuities. And on top of it, if you think about mesh adaptation, the optimal mesh, meaning the optimal mesh to obtain a certain complexity with a given amount of nodes, these three optimal meshes will look very different from each other. So having to consider a common mesh for all parameters leads to a mesh which is much, much larger compared to the optimal mesh for one configuration. So these considerations and many others have led to a lot of research in so-called nonlinear approximation methods. What I'm going to be talking in this talk are methods based on coordinate transformation. The physical intuition behind it is that in several cases, coherent structures that are troublesome for linear approximations, like shocks, shear layers, cracks, vary smoothly with respect to the parameter. So in that sense, the idea is to replace the traditional linear ansatz, so u at equal to z alpha at, with the following composition, where we have the composition between a linear ansatz, exactly as before, with a bijection, phi, which also depends on the parameter and depends on an additional set of generalized coordinates, which in this talk will be called A. So composition with phi minus 1 corresponds to mesh deformation. So in a sense, it's pretty straightforward in the traditional spectral element, finite volume framework. Second comment, the action phi minus 1 should be designed to track sharp features of the solution field. In this case, the sharp feature of the shock discontinuity. So the idea is that we should find phi so that u compose phi looks like that. So it freezes the position of the discontinuity in parameter space. So that's the idea. So at the very, very high level, registration aims to find a parametric transformation that improves the compressibility. In this talk, compressibility means the linear compressibility of the solution set. And in this talk, I will discuss some recent advances on the development of registration techniques for parametric model order reduction with emphasis on advection-dominated flows. But I would like to say once again that this is not specific to advection-dominated flows. It's really specific to structures with compact support. So basically what we want to do is to devise a numerical algorithm which takes as input a set of snapshots from the solution set and returns a parametric low-rank diffeomorphism. So given mu in some parameter domain, curly P returns a bijection phi, which depends on a set of generalized coordinates. Now, the way in which this algorithm works is that for each parameter in the training set, we try to minimize some objective function, f target, over all possible diffeomorphisms in diff 0. So diff 0, for those of you that are not familiar, is the set of diffeomorphisms that are isotopic to the identity. So from a mechanical standpoint, we seek large but continuous perturbations of the identity map. Okay? So we only care about this class of diffeomorphism, which is, I can explain to you if you're interested, but basically those are the things that make sense in the parametric context. Now, there are basically three major questions that one has to address. Question one is how to choose the target function. So how to choose this guy? So basically, what should we align? Okay? The second question is how to choose this parametrization and how to perform a dimensionality reduction in the space of mappings. And the third question is the generalization to unseen configuration. You see that basically here we find a mapping for each parameter in the training set, but we want to generalize over the whole domain. I'm not going to be talking about this, but this is based on some form of regression algorithm in this talk. It's not the only option, but that's what I'm going to do.
What do you mean exactly by isotopic?
So basically there is a continuous map from the identity to this mapping. So the typical example of diffeomorphism that is not isotopic to the identity, take a square and you rotate by 90 degrees. That's not isotopic to the identity because you're moving one corner. So that's the typical example. But thanks for the question. Or like any diffeomorphism with Jacobian less than zero. So like a reason. That's so let me discuss about the target function. Here we distinguish between two scenarios. One scenario is which we have a sufficient amount of data, training data. What I mean by sufficient in the example is going to be 50-ish, 100, more than that. Okay? In that sense, we can use this type of target function. This means that we try to find phi so that u compose phi is close to a linear space, our target reduced space. Okay? So this reduced space encodes our prior knowledge of the target. And in practice, it's built with using a greedy technique adapted to the framework of registration. So the main advantage of this idea is that this is well aligned with the ultimate goal of registration, because in the end, that's really the objective function we care about. So that's a good thing. The bad thing is that it might be prone to undesirable local minima for coarse discretization in parameter space. So if you don't have enough snapshots, so say you have two snapshots in the worst case scenario, this is not really pertinent. Okay? So that's why I was saying before 50, 100 snapshots is kind of the limit that one consider. No, if you're in a data scarce scenario, so if you're in the limit, you have just two snapshots, it is more convenient to consider the alignment of two-point clouds. So the idea is that given your solution, you sample some points based on some sensor. This can be, for instance, a shock sensor. If you think about shocks, can be the some sensor associated with vortices for vertical flows, can be something that link finds the crack in a data in a certain structure. So this is where you, that's the sensor. So this gives you two different point clouds. Okay? Now, these point clouds are not matched, so there is no reason why they should be in the same, and you don't know which point goes where. That's why you consider these weights, which basically tell you what's the probability that the point I should be mapped to the point J. This is a common problem in image processing, and can be solved using expectation maximization algorithms, which come from image processing literature. And I can give you more details if you want. So the advantage of this is that this is pretty robust for even small data sets with just two snapshots. The disadvantage, in a sense, that you need to know a little bit about the physics. This goes back to the point that David Ricklang made before, that you need still to know about the physics of your problem. Now, let me now discuss about the second problem, which is the parametrization of diffeomorphism. And first of all, I would like to explain why this problem is difficult. So the technical reason is basically that bijectivity is not stable for small perturbations in C1. And this can be seen with this picture. So basically, take two diffeomorphisms of the unit ball, phi0 and phi1, which differ at some point on the boundary. Okay? Now, any diffeomorphism of the unit ball should map the boundary of the unit ball in itself. So if you take the convex combination between phi0 and phi1, this is not a diffeomorphism anymore. So it does not map the unit ball in itself. And so this means that essentially you cannot use traditional affine parametrizations to parametrize your mappings. So you need to find another type of parametrization in a sense. So we explore two different ideas. One idea is vector flows. So we cannot directly parametrize the displacement, so we parametrize a pseudo-velocity. What that means is that we define a parametric velocity field, which depends on this coefficient A, defined this way. And then we define the mapping as a solution to an ODE with initial condition psi, and basically you take the mapping at time t equal to 1. Okay? So that's basically the idea of vector flows. Now, to my knowledge, this idea comes from optimal transportation theory, the work by Benamou and Brenier, which has been, has been 9 years in France. These are kind of the seminal works on the subject. But it's also been explored in image processing and also mesh morphing. So somehow it's not new. What has been like the focus of the thesis of Yon Labatou at INRIA is the emphasis on bounded domains. Of course, in model reduction, we care about boundaries, so we care about solving PDEs in bounded domains, and that's why basically our work was to adapt these methods to bounded domains. That's what we did. Now, in terms of mathematical properties, we have this, let's say, universal approximation, which means that any element of diff 0 can be expressed as the flow of a vector field. And then we have this result, which is pretty important if you want to apply gradient descent techniques. Okay? So we have an explicit expression for the gradient, which is also very important. Another idea comes from, we refer here as compositional maps. So this stems from two observations. Observation one, the issue that I had with the example before was really curved domains. So the fact that the boundary is curved. The other observation is that bijectivity can be preserved under composition. So if you have a polytopal domain, you can just try to parameterize the displacement exactly as one usually does for this sense infinite element. Now, if you have a curved domains, you can consider mappings of this type, where basically you introduce a polytop, omega p, and a bijection phi, psi, I'm sorry, from the polytop to omega. So now your mapping is defined this way, and your coefficients live in this reference domain. Okay? So those are the kind of two different ansatzes that we have been considering. So few mathematical properties. If omega is a polytop, phi belongs to diff 0 if and only if is of this form. So basically, we still have a universal approximation, but it only works in polytops. This result is false in curved domains because basically we are introducing some fictitious vertices that we cannot move in the domain. Now, let me make a few comments. So evaluation of vector flows involves the solution to an ODE. So in a sense, they are slower to be evaluated. So that's one point. Second point, bijectivity of vector flows is guaranteed for exact time integration. And so this means that we need to integrate quite well in the proximity of the boundary. On the other hand, if you rely on some form of regression to extend our mapping for unseen parameters, there is no guarantee that compositional maps are actually bijective for out-of-sample parameters, which means, once again, that you need sufficient amount of data in the training stage. In addition, expressivity of compositional maps for curved domains depends on the choice of psi, which is non-trivial in practice, even if exploits available tooling in mesh adaptation. So the conclusion is both approaches have strengths and limitations. There is still a lot to do. In my opinion, the main challenge of vector flows is to develop rapid time integration schemes. And the challenge of compositional maps is to develop automatic construction of psi and omega p for curved domains. Those are the kind of bottlenecks for Favart. Now, so far I've been talking about how to define a parametric registration technique. So an algorithm which takes a simple snapshot and returns a low-rank diffeomorphism. Now the question is, how can we employ all of it in a model order reduction? Now, one idea is to use these methods for interpolation. So basically, try to exploit coordinate transformations to perform nonlinear interpolation of solution fields. So that's kind of a first approach. Another idea is data augmentation. So basically, the idea is to exploit coordinate transformation to generate synthetic snapshots that do not belong to the span of the data sets of the snapshots that we have seen so far, and then put everything together in a POD-based model order reduction technique. Okay? And here the purpose is to reduce training costs, of course. The last step is projection-based model reduction. So in this case, which means basically exploit some form of residual minimization for prediction. Here, basically, we have one decision to make. So we have two sets of generalized coordinates, one associated with the solution in the reference frame, one associated with the mapping. So we can use some form of regression for the mapping and some form of residual minimization for the solution, or use basically residual minimization for both. Okay? Now, this is a very incomplete list of publications that explore these essentially things that I've just said. I should say that concerning this approach, to my knowledge, only Mazar has been doing that so far. And it's also related to this shock capturing, high order shock capturing techniques for DG, for those of you that are familiar with it. What also I wanted to say is that once we have the mapping phi, this first approach can really exploit established tools in linear reduced basis methods. So in a sense, one of the advantages of these registration techniques is that once you have the mapping, there is nothing fundamentally new compared to what you already have in your projection-based model reduction code. Okay? Now, this is the framework that we have been working on for projection-based model reduction. So basically, we initialize our algorithm with the identity map and with a certain mesh, and then we generate a reduced order model using linear subspace model reduction technique, okay, on this very coarse mesh. Then we generate snapshots using our available reducer and model. We apply mesh adaptation to find a better, let's say, a better mesh. Then we apply registration to find a mapping that tracks our coherence structures. And then we apply model reduction training. Okay? And then we iterate. So this idea looks very, very similar. In fact, it's pretty related to what we do in mesh adaptation, in which basically the loop in which you build an approximate solution, you adapt the mesh, and then you iterate. And so the for loop, exactly as in that context, addresses inaccuracy of early stage high fidelity simulations. Second point, one advantage of this idea is that model reduction training can be performed using standard linear model reduction method for parametrized geometries. So this really exploits 20 years of history in projection-based model reduction techniques. The last point, which I think is very interesting, but there is no time to cover in this talk, is that essentially for this approach to be efficient computationally, it's important to reuse information from previous iterations. Because here you're generating a lot of information on your problem that you really need to use. Here, let's say the keyword would be multi-fidelity training, and it's really important, and I can give you more details if you're interested in that. Now, this was kind of the initial point of the thesis of Isaac Tifuti at INRIA. We consider two different extensions. One extension is to combine this idea with piecewise approximation, basically include a clustering step to handle shock topology changes. So basically when two shocks merge in one shock, or similar ideas. Again, no time to discuss about that, but basically we combined what I've shown before with KSVD, which is a generalization of k-means, and with projection-based model reduction techniques. Another, direction that we pursued was goal-oriented model reduction. So instead of approximating our state, we approximate some quantity of interest. And here we use, include a reducer and model for the adjoint to enhance our estimate of the quantity of interest. Here we, a keyword that is that was important for us was the dual-weighted residual error estimation, which is important for both mesh adaptation and model order reduction. And also hierarchical error estimation, which have been considered by Carsten Uhler and Mario Berger in the context of model reduction, but also important in mesh adaptation. Now, the point I would like to emphasize is that registration at this stage is just a tool, like many other tools, that can be integrated in various model reduction workflows, okay, to address a broad range of computational mechanics problems. So it's basically just a plugin, ideally, it's just a plugin that can be included in your technique. So you don't have to modify your entire workflow just to fit it with registration techniques. Now, another idea is nonlinear interpolation. This is a work together with Angelo Iollo. This idea is easier to explain when you just have two snapshots. So I'm going to explain when you have just two snapshots, but it can be generalized. Now, take two snapshots, which are denoted by U0 and U1, and the goal is to interpolate between them in a nonlinear manner. Now, the first step is to apply registration to define the mapping phi, which is the vector flow of a velocity v. Now, then you define phi of s to 0 for each s between 0 and 1, which is the backward map. So this goes from, you integrate back from t equal to s to t equal to 0 with the final condition psi. Okay? Then phi s to 1 is the forward map. So integrate forward from s to 1 with initial condition psi.
So
and
psi belongs to?
Omega, so to the domain. So basically for each point in the domain, you integrate forward to find, the forward map. And then you integrate backward to find the backward map. And then you do a convex combination between the two. Okay? Again, this can be combined with compositional maps, can be extended to multiple parameters, but the idea stays the same. Okay. Now, I think this is easy to explain, to interpret with a picture. So basically, the intuition is that instead of doing convex interpolation, so for fixed x here, you do a convex interpolation along the, I would call, pseudo characteristics of the vector field. Okay? So this is the idea. So phi s to 1 and phi s to 0 are simply the foot of the characteristics in the two sense. Note that by construction, this intermediate snapshot does not belong to the span of u0 and u1. And so this can be used for data augmentation. And this is something that we exploit. Okay? Now, let me present two numerical results. And first of all, those are, let's say, standard test cases. The first is an implicit flow past an array of LS89 blades. So, steady-state compressible Euler for ideal gases, two parameters, free stream Mach number, and the distance between two consecutive blades, okay? Which is basically the height of the channel in this case. Now, the challenges are the periodic boundary conditions, which are quite challenging for registration because they need to be preserved, several coherent instructions. So basically, we have a shock that develops here, and we have the wake that are associated with the trailing edge, basically. So if these are, say, the Mach number on the upper side of the blade, so here, you see that there is a strong shock that develops, which depends on the value of the parameter. And these are the peaks of the entropy profiles, which are associated with the wakes. You see many of them because basically the domain is periodic and you just simulate one part of the channel. Now, we perform three iterations of the procedure that I presented before. We use a P2DG discretization and we perform snapshot generation using the available reducer del model from the previous iteration. We validate performance over 20 of sample parameters. And what I'm going to show are the L2 relative error with respect to the current high fidelity simulation, the L2 suboptimality index, this means prediction error divided by projection error. Of course, this number is going to be larger than one, but we hope to be as close as possible to one. And finally, the error in total enthalpy. For Euler, total enthalpy is constant, so this can be seen as an indicator with respect to the true solution. Okay? Now, in terms of model reduction techniques, we rely on LSPG projection with element edgewise empirical quadrature. We use a discretized map approach to handle geometry variations. And we rely on greedy sampling driven by a residual indicator to generate the ROM. And what I want to emphasize is that these techniques have, at this stage, a quite a long history in the what used to be called Morepass community, now it's called More. And that shows that really we can exploit a lot of history in traditional techniques in model reduction. Greedy sampling terminates when the relative error is below 0.1%, and this explains why the error in the test set is in the order of 0.1%. This is suboptimality index. This means that we are a factor of 3 or a factor of 2 worse than projection, which for those of you that are familiar with projection-based model reduction, I think is pretty good for those kind of problems. It really shows how well these kind of linear subspace techniques work these days. This is enthalpy error, and this is, an error with respect to the true solution, and so this improves as you increase the size of the mesh. This is the world clock online cost. You see that thanks to hyper-reduction, this should be independent of the size of the mesh. But in practice, it depends on the size of the mesh because the number of modes slightly increases with the iteration. This is, at least for this test case, but still is between 0.2 and 0.3 seconds. So it increases, but not by a lot. Now, in terms of registration, what I'm going to show are basically the Mach number on the upper side of the blade and the entropy profile on the lower boundary. Okay, and these are how they look like in the physical configuration. Now, this is iteration one in the reference configuration. You see that the shocks is pretty under resolved, and the peaks of the entropy profile are just awful. This is iteration two, and this is iteration three. And you see that as we refine the mesh, the resolution of our shocks become much better, and also we are able to resolve the peaks of the wakes. Okay? Now, in terms of mesh adaptation, we use here a simple MARC-derefined strategy driven by the local variation on total enthalpy and the normal gradient of the entropy. And the implementation is based on MMG, for those of you that know it. We also add results for feature-based mesh adaptation, if some of you is interested, but for this test case, they pretty much give the same results. Red dots is where we refine. So this is iteration one, this is iteration two, and this is iteration three. And as expected, you refine on the shock and in the wakes. So what I want to emphasize is that in this work, we rely on two separate mesh adaptation mechanisms. A parameter independent H refinement, which is done in the reference configuration, and a parameter dependent R refinement or mesh morphing, which is based on registration. So in a sense, registration helps with compression and with mesh adaptation. So it's really a combination between the two that helps keep the size of the mesh small. So I wanted to give a sense about the offline computational costs. This is done on a laptop, so it doesn't mean much. These are a lot of numbers, but I want to focus on just one number, which is 72%, which is the percentage of offline cost of the last greedy algorithm. So if you believe that the greedy is a good reference for linear methods, this means that this is more expensive than a linear method, but in the same order of magnitude. Okay? So, second best case, due to Yon Labatou, that is in the audience. So, it's another classical test case, is a turbulent flow past Onera MC's wing. Okay? So, the parameter here is the angle of attack. Reynolds number is 14 million, Mach number is 0.84, so we are in the transonic regime. And we use Spallerton-Mallard turbulence model, and our DG model is based on roughly 10 million degrees of freedom. No, sorry, 10 million elements. And simulation are performed over the Onera Airbus DLR software CODA. So you see that here we have a typical lambda shock on the wing. Position depends on the angle of attack. So in a sense, you still are in a situation which you have a coherent structure, the lambda shock, that is displaced as a result of parameter variation. So here we have just two data sets, so two data points. So we use a point set sensor. In this case, this is the sensor that we use. This is comes strictly from TechPlot manual. So in a sense, it's a traditional sensor for shocks. And we rely on vector flows. So the black dots are the points which are selected by the Ducros sensor, sorry, no, by this sensor. Okay? And the sensor activation surfaces are associated with the target parameter. Okay? And you see that basically, if you compare these two pictures, the mapping is able to deform the points to match the sensor activation surface of the target snapshot. Okay? Now, this is qualitative result. I would like to present something quantitative. And one first idea, first of all, I want to also present the CDI prediction. And you see that, I hope you can see, that we displace the shock without having these kind of piecewise two shocks type of approximation. So this was qualitative. Now let me show something quantitative. One first idea is to use CDI estimate as initial condition for the full order model. So one of the problems with this random simulation is that they take a lot to converge. So we can just use a good initial condition provided by CDI. So we compare in red, I hope you can see, CDI, which is this nonlinear interpolation, with convex interpolation in black, and the P0 DG discretizes the result. Okay? Remember, we use P1. So we see here that we gain a factor of 3, which means a speed up of a factor of 3x for this simulation. And again, here we are in a very data scarce scenario, we just have two snapshots. Okay? Another idea is to use all of these for data augmentation. Data augmentation means that in this case we have two snapshots. So we here compute the projection error on the intermediate snapshot for the intermediate angle of attack, based in red, based on the two snapshots that we have. Here we get 14% error. And now we're using data augmentation, so based on the result of CDI. Here we get a reduction of from 14% to a bit less than roughly 10%. Okay? So it's not incredible, but still it's something that is done with just two snapshots. Okay? That's important. So let me conclude. So basically, as you all know in this room, transport phenomena are quite challenging for model reduction. And due to the inadequacy of linear approximation and also the need for parameter-dependent adaptive meshes, that's really important, I think. And in this presentation, we proposed a framework which is based on registration techniques that is tailored to parametric problems with smoothly varying coherent structures with compass support. That's really kind of the keyword that you should have in mind. Of course, we apply to shocks, but this approach is not limited to shocks. One of the priorities that we put in our work was try to prioritize parsimonious offline training. So try to reduce offline costs as much as possible. And this was done through parameter-dependent mesh adaptation, which is enabled by registration techniques, and also with data augmentation, which is a tool to reduce the amount of snapshots to reach a certain projection error. Okay? Now, of course, this is just one class of linear approximation techniques. In the literature, there is a growing literature on nonlinear approximations. We have seen also in this in very nice workshop several other intuitions. Of course, the choice in the end should be a compromise between expressive power and learnability. And that's really why I think in the moving forward, there is a lot of opportunities for mathematical analysis to try to understand strengths and limitations of each, let's say, nonlinear approximation method for specific classes of engineering problems. And with that being said, thank you for the attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.